UK government might have shut down?
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning. I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, Republican Congressman Steve King of Iowa continues his racist comments. Yo, wait till we play for you what he said in a radio interview about how blacks and Hispanics are going to be fighting each other as whites become minorities in America. Dude, really? White nationalist Richard Spencer will be on the show to, of course, defend Steve King. I also talked to Latino Victory Fund Cristobal Alex to discuss this as well. Y'all, it's going to be interesting. The White House is defending the GOP health care plan despite bad numbers from the Congressional Budget Office, and right-wing conservatives are not happy. Ooh, got drama in the GOP. We'll talk with Democratic Congresswoman Val Demings of Florida and Dr. Robin Armstrong, a physician and former Texas GOP vice chair, about this plan. A portion of Trump's highly anticipated tax returns was finally revealed last night on the Rachel Maddow Show. What does it say about the president, and did he actually leak them? Likely. Also, folks are on the show. Driverless vehicles, they're on the way, but there's a downside, and a new report says blacks and other minorities who drive for a living will bear the brunt. Plus, Stellar Award-winning singer, gospel star J.J. Harrison is in the house to talk about his number one single, You Deserve It, and his upcoming tour. Also, Undefeated has a special on Wilma Rudolph, and we will show you that as well. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Let's go. Be a white congressman in America. Iowa's Steve King continues to showcase his white nationalist beliefs in response to a tweet he posted over the weekend that drew major condemnation from Republicans and Democrats, even though two of the black Republicans in Congress have been quite silent on this. Y'all, other people's babies, he's talking about y'all. In an interview with an Iowa radio station on Monday, King took issue with recent comments made by Univision anchor Jorge Ramos about whites becoming the minority in America within 30 years.
Jorge Ramos' stock and trade is to identify and try and drive wedges between race and ethnicity, I should say, to be more correct. And when you start accentuating the differences, then you end up with people that are at each other's throats. And he's adding up Hispanics and blacks, and he predicts will be in greater number than whites in America. I will predict the Hispanics and the blacks will be fighting each other before that happens.
Boy, that's stupid. Later, King went on Tucker Carlson's show on Fox News to discuss, again, the controversy. And it's no shock that Tucker Carlson would defend Steve King's racist tweets and his white nationalist views.
We're at this place now in America where we're seeing people marching in the streets that are pushing back against the American culture and the American civilization. And it's troubling to me that over the last 25 years, we've essentially phased out the promotion of assimilation, and we promoted instead multiculturalism and diversity as if it were our strength. And in fact, they're using it now to divide us, and that's what Barack Obama did throughout his presidency.
Everything you said, I think, is defensible and probably right. The problem with the tweet was that it suggested there's a racial component to American identity.
While it was no shock Tucker Carlson would say that, but if you want to understand Tucker Carlson, if y'all want to understand what it means to be white in America, he had a failed show on PBS canceled, failed show on CNN canceled, failed show on MSNBC canceled, and he still got another show on Fox News. Boy, it must be good to be a white man in America to have that many failures. Show me somebody black or Hispanic who had three shows that got canceled and got another one, or even two, or even one. All right, joining us from Whitefish, Montana, white nationalist Richard Spencer, president of the National Policy Institute, Radix Journal. Of course, he also is an alt-right leader. So, Richard, you must love Congressman Steve King because he's right up your alley.
Right. Steve King said nothing wrong, and he said a lot right.
Like what?
Well, the basic concept of his tweet, his offending tweet, which is we cannot build a civilization with other people's babies, is exactly correct. and that is European civilization is intrinsically linked to Europeans.
It is not some
free-floating value system that we could project onto other peoples. It is ours. It comes from us.
Richard, you're in Whitefish, Montana, right?
That's where I'm right now.
Which country in Europe is that located in?
Oh, not this again.
No. But you keep saying European values. I'm asking again, are you in Europe right now or are you in the United States of America?
Roland, when I say a word like Africa or Europe, that can both mean the continent, that is the geographic place, or it could mean the race of people who emerged, who evolved on those continents.
Oh, gotcha. So, okay, all right,
I'm just double checking. European, it is a reference to white people.
Gotcha, okay, but you could just say white people because you could actually be white and not from Europe and still be called, so that's what I'm trying to understand.
Right,
so
also,
but here's what's interesting. When you talk about other people's babies, you do know that there have been significant advances in this country as a result of other people's babies being in this country. You look at what's happening in Silicon Valley right now, you look at, of course, the African-American experience. In fact, when you talk about even white folks who came from other countries, y'all also came from somewhere else. So you're other people's babies.
Yes. I mean, yes and no. I mean, look, in terms of just Silicon Valley, that idea that you just put out there. I mean, 95% of the entrepreneurs who are, you know, really successful, multimillionaires under 40, 95% of them are white. In terms of, look, all of these amazing inventions and things that have changed our lives, I mean, these are derived from our people.
Who's our people?
White people.
Okay, but right now, but when you have advances right now in Silicon Valley, when you look at what's happening with technology, even when you look at right now of the young folks who are scoring high in STEM, 83% of them don't look like you. So our future actually is pretty bright because of other people's babies. And here's the other piece, Richard. We're not going anywhere.
It doesn't matter.
So y'all might want to, but here's the deal. You can't blame black people and Hispanic people because white people in America, one, stopped having babies. And two, you can't blame black people and Hispanics also for the opioid addiction where white folks are dropping dead at a higher rate than anybody else. Y'all on the painkillers, not us.
There are a lot of problems within the white community. I would never deny that at all. The fundamental point, and this is the point that was truly radical and truly right about what Steve King said, is that culture and civilization are intrinsically connected to race. Indeed, they're derived from race.
What culture is that?
So sure, we could have a ton of intelligent Asians or Indians come to America and do great in STEM or whatever, but they're going to create a different culture and different civilization.
But here's the other, Richard, let me ask you a question.
That's an idea that he put forward, although he wasn't really able to articulate it and stick with it.
Well, if he can't,
he also said later that, oh, we need to adopt the world's children and turn them into Americans and things like that. So Steve King, not everything he said is correct. But in that tweet, the reason why it became a controversy is because he was getting at something, that this is our culture.
Well, actually, here's the deal, though. You don't actually have a culture without other people in this country. You don't have one. I mean, without other people's babies, when you say our culture, you don't have it.
I can tell you
without black folks in music, you don't have a culture. When you look at food, when you look at dance, see, when one says culture, that means a whole lot of stuff and not what you're talking about. So
I agree with you that very often races will engage in what you could say is cultural appropriation. If you look at Japan, its alphabet came from China and
let's talk about America.
Okay, if you want to talk about the white race, something like the guitar, so much of food is in a way elements of it are taken from other cultures. But there's a spirit
Or stolen.
No, stolen is actually a very wrong way to think about it. This is like Afrocentrism of civilization.
So who took the guitar? White folks took the guitar from somebody else, or did black people take the guitar from white people? I'm just curious.
Right, but it's not stealing. It's appropriating in the sense of there's a spirit behind it that we make something our own. Okay. That's in a way what makes a people is that spiritual sense that we can take elements of other things and create them. Well, the fact is, American culture, sure, there are elements from other peoples, the elements from Africa, the elements from Native American cultures. But there's this European spirit that defined it, that brought it all together.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, when you brought the guitar, the greatest guitarist to ever walk this planet, it's Prince. He's other people's babies. Richard Spencer, we appreciate it, man. Thanks a bunch. Chris Double, Alex, I want to go to you. Again, what you have is you have a member of Congress, Steve King, who has made consistently white racist comments. And a lot of Republicans, okay, I don't want to say anything about him.
That's exactly right. He's got a long history of making derogatory comments about Latinos, Mexican immigrants, other people of color. He's the guy who said he wanted to electrify the fence along the border and shock migrants as they came over like cattle. He's the guy that says Latinos have calves like cantaloupes because they carry 75-pound bags of marijuana across the border. And now this latest comment that he made is completely outrageous. But think about the context that he's able to say this in. What he's with this president, Donald Trump, who really set the framework for his campaign to be president by trying to delegitimize President Barack Obama, this birther conspiracy. And then when he launched his campaign on the very first day, he attacked Latinos, calling us rapists and thieves. And then it went on and on and on, and he attacked Muslims and others. And so he's trying to create this false reality where only his truth is the truth, where all immigrants and Latinos are criminals, where all African Americans live in war zones. But it's false. That's not the truth. And unfortunately, what Donald Trump has done is create this environment now where folks like Spencer, who you just heard, Steve King and others can be openly racist, and that's celebrated by this White House.
Shelley, go to my iPad, please. This is a piece that's in The Nation that was dropped, and it's called Fear of Diversity Made People More Likely to Vote Trump. Sean McElwee, Jason McDonald, they broke down the numbers. I want to bring in my panel, Spencer Overton from the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, Rena Shah-Barara, and Greg Carr. Howard University. Folks, this article, combined with when you hear Steve King's comments and Richard Spencer and you listen to Donald Trump, This is the reality of where we are right here. This is it. So what King said, you got a lot of whites out there in parts of the country. Oh, they're fine with that. Remember, he got elected with 61% of the vote because of these type of comments.
Absolutely. I mean, Steve is scared, and he should be. Richard Spence is scared. He should be. I mean, America has been as white as it's ever going to be. It's beginning to look more and more like the rest of the world. First of all, he's very disrespectful to his grandfather. He knows everybody came out of Africa. He'll tell you that. But you know, they understand that they can't win another election in this country without scaring that up. And you know, Steve King has a friend in the White House. The Trump Bannon people, they are his friends.
Well, absolutely.
So this is not imaginary here in terms of this white nationalism. We heard it. The question is it an anomaly, or is it just the tip of the iceberg that we're seeing with Steve King, et cetera?
I won't call it the tip of the iceberg. This iceberg has been floating for a long time.
Oh, it's been. But is there more that we're not seeing? Does it go even deeper is the question.
Oh, yes, it does.
Right, yeah. Right. So the GOP leaders, others need to step up and denounce this stuff.
Dr. Carr, your point, I don't think they're scared. I think they're being emboldened by this White House.
Yep.
I feared for it when Trump stepped into the primary. I said he is propping up white nationalism. You know it. The people in the rural parts of this country are feeling endangered by people of color. They feel like their jobs are being taken by them. Now, look, he represents a small segment in Iowa, and his state paper, the Des Moines Register, came out and said, look, the GOP needs to prop up somebody to run against this guy. It's not enough to condemn his words, and I hope the GOP chooses to censure or expel him. They have not yet.
And then, of course, this whole idea of blacks and Hispanics going to be fighting each other before it happens. Again, he's hoping that's the case.
This is the divide and conquer approach by these white supremacists. They try to pit different groups against one another because what they are actually afraid of is what happens when we work together.
Right.
Our destinies are aligned. Look what happened in 2008 when record numbers of Latinos and African Americans turned out to vote, and we elected Barack Obama the president. Then we got health care, and so many of our communities were uplifted by that access. Of course, now it's all threatened by Trump care, but what they're afraid of is us working together, and what they're really afraid of is us kicking them out of office in 2020.
Yeah.
Why are they so afraid of that, though? I mean, you know, when we look at the history of Europe, it's been consecutive war. I mean, there's been a lot written about this. People have talked about this. So why project that onto other people in an experiment that began with a settler colony when you have people really trying to build something that has never existed. You can't go back to Greece and look for democracy. The Athenians dispossessed most of the people in Athens. So when you look at it, what we're talking about is uncharted human territory. And ultimately, the age of Europe has only been about 500 years, and it's already coming apart. So, you know, I think anybody's going to listen to the next millennium, it's probably not going to be these cats.
Final comment.
Final comment. Look back to what Malcolm X said. I'm paraphrasing here, but what the media and what Steve Bannon and these guys are trying to do in the White House is basically get us to think that, you know, it's okay to divide and conquer, it's okay to be racists, and essentially what we've got to do is come together and fight back.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Hey, Steve King, we won't be fighting, bro. We won't be fighting. Shelly, get a wide shot. Thank you. Get a wide shot. Wide shot. Can you get a two shot? Okay, Steve King, Richard Spencer, y'all got a problem with this. I appreciate it, man. Thanks a bunch. Coming up next, we'll talk to Congresswoman Val Demings about the Republican health care bill. Ooh, they fighting amongst each other. That's where the real fight's taking place. 15 after the hour, News 1-9.
So you want the truth? Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now.
All right, Tom, it's drama in D.C. Lord, 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 Tom, the Republicans are fighting each other because we got Trump care, Ryan care, they can't stand Obamacare. Now they sitting there trying to cut health care. Broke white people are losing their mind in West Virginia, in Ohio. They on TV crying left and right. And I'm going, hashtag, we tried to tell you. We tried to tell you. And so now the conservatives, the right wing and the Congress, they're saying flat out, look, we do not like this new bill. Now Donald Trump saying, I got to negotiate with all these crazy people. And so what is going to happen? Joining us right now is a new member, Tom, of the Congressional Black Caucus from Florida. She used to be a cop. Now she put that gun up. Now she's in Congress. Val Demings, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
You may still need it.
Well, we won't talk about that, but I'm doing well.
So you're watching this. You're new from Florida. Affordable Care Act is critical. And now you got all these old folks in Florida who voted for Trump, a lot of older white folks. Now they're freaking out because this health care plan that they're proposing is going to hurt them the most.
Well, you know, it's interesting that, remember, the Republicans voted over 50 times before I got here to repeal Obamacare. It never happened. And now they put forth a plan. I don't know whether it's Trump plan or Ryan plan. I think if it had been a good thing, it would have been Trump plan, but now it's suddenly the Ryan plan. But we know that over 24 million people would lose coverage. Millions of jobs would be lost. It would particularly hurt the people in Florida, as you've already mentioned. And Republicans are divided, and as you said, it's chaos on the Republican side of the aisle right now. This plan is not a good thing.
Dr. Robin Armstrong, Tom Jones is right now, former vice chair of the Texas Republican Party, also a doctor. All right, Dr. Armstrong, can you defend this plan for your party? You a brother?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that everyone was expecting this CBO report that came out here recently. And I know that Paul Ryan had spoken about it a week ago, that he was expecting this report. And I'll tell you what we find is that when people have an opportunity to choose the plan that they want, then many of them are going to opt out of an ineffective plan. You know, I believe that unfortunately through Obamacare, people have been inadequately covered. And I think that's the reason we're talking about this right now.
But Robin, you know, Dr. Robin, I'm going to ask you again. This plan, premiums will go up 15% to 20%. They estimate 24 million people will be uninsured. Older Americans will be forced off of this plan because they'll be banking on younger people. The most people will impact it are the people who voted for Trump: Ohio, West Virginia, Florida, Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, Arkansas. And so you're going to have a whole bunch of mad white working class folks at y'all. What y'all going to do?
Well, I believe what's going to happen is what they're going to find, and what people are going to find is that people are ineffectively covered today, Roland, and I think that's the big problem. I think what people are going to find is that their health insurance premiums are actually going to go down. You know, these CBO reports are oftentimes inaccurate. They're ineffective. They were when they scored Obamacare as well.
And the deductibles are going to go up.
The deductibles are going to go up. Right, Dr. Robin.
The deductibles are going to be so high you need insurance for your deductible.
And not getting any help from the federal government.
Well, yeah. I think what you're going to see is that premiums in the first year are going down, but then they say we're going to go up, but then they say premiums are going to go down because it's going to take a year or two to correct. Then what you're going to find is also there's going to be insurance competition across state lines, which is going to lower the price of it. And so people are going to find that their insurance is going to be less and their premiums are going to be less and their deductibles are going to be less.
Except there's a problem with...
But that's what's going to have to happen. I mean, that's what's going to happen with this bill over
but,
time.
But Congresswoman Demings, there's a problem with what Dr. Robin just said, because right now there are three states that allow for cross-state insurance. And
that's
guess
right.
what? They don't have it because it takes so much money
right.
for an insurance company to set up a network in a
right
new state.
Right now, any state could do that, but you're absolutely correct. In order to set up that network of hospitals, doctors, providers, it's very costly and very difficult to do. This plan is not a good thing, and you can try to cut it any way you want to. It's amazing how the CBO report, when it comes out in favor of the other side, it's okay, but now suddenly it's flawed.
Well, in fact, in the exact same report right now, in the same report, mm-hmm. they said the deficit will go down by 300 plus billion. They say that's good. They like
that's
that
right.
part.
Same
but not
group.
The other part. But it's the same report.
Same
so
report.
So you
that's
like
right.
that part of the report.
That's right.
Not the other part of the report. So which is it? Is the report good or bad?
And just,
well,
you
I'll,
cannot
I'll
get
the,
you
I'll
cannot get around the fact.
Robin, hold on. I'm gonna come to you. Go ahead.
24 million people would lose coverage. Premiums will go up. Seniors, disabled, children will be adversely affected under this new plan.
So Dr. Robin, what about that? Okay, so you like a part of the plan and not the other plan. Bro, you can't have it both ways.
Well, no.
What I would say
that a lot of those folks are not covered today. People who are on Medicaid and people who are on Obamacare insurance are not covered today. When you have a $10,000 deductible, those folks effectively do not have insurance. They have insurance on paper only.
But as a physician,
I can say that those folks do not have the adequate care and coverage that they need.
So I got to ask you, Dr. Robin, according to the CBO report, Tom, this is what it says, that they're going to get rid of the government subsidy and say, oh, here's a tax credit. But if the government subsidy right now provides for $13,000 and the tax credit is going to only provide $4,000, Robin, where are you going to find the $9,000?
Good question.
Well, what you're going to do is you're going to look. There's going to be expanded Medicaid to block grants that are going to go to the states where the states can control it. And so the states know what they need for their people.
Hold on, I'm sorry, Dr. Robin, I got to interrupt you. Did you just say expanded block grants? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Block grants down to the states.
Correct
absolutely.
Me if I'm wrong.
The states know what they need.
Robin, correct me if I'm wrong.
No,
didn't South Carolina decline Medicaid expansion?
Let's talk about
didn't
Florida.
Didn't North Carolina decline Medicaid expansion? Didn't Florida
Texas,
decline Medicaid
Texas
expansion?
Did as well.
Didn't
and
Texas decline
Texas.
Medicaid expansion? So you're
absolutely.
Telling me they
and
all
Texas
declined
right
Medicaid
now.
Expansion before? Now they're going to accept it?
Well, Texas did as well. It's not being expanded now. Medicaid has been a program long before Obamacare. And so what is happening now is the federal government would issue Medicaid in block grants as opposed to having the federal government force states to do what they
that's
want
That's not
them
expansion?
To.
Wow.
It's going to go to states in block grants. Medicaid has been around for a long time.
We know.
Texas has Medicaid, and Texas has had Medicaid, and will continue to have Medicaid.
You know,
we did
so,
not expand it under Obamacare.
Congresswoman Demings,
what's really so sad about that is in the state of Florida, almost 1 million people could be covered and are not because our governor, playing political games, refused to expand Medicaid. Now, do we really believe that he's going to take a block grant and who knows what that amount of money will be and divvy it up and still cover those people? That makes no sense to me.
And fully cover? Because that gap is just going to get wider.
Well, I can tell you what is going to happen is insurance is going to be less expensive for people. People are going to buy adequate insurance. Folks, people are not being covered adequately by Medicaid today. As a physician, I know that. People aren't getting the coverage that they need with Medicaid. People aren't getting the coverage that they need with Obamacare insurance. It's just not happening today. That's why we're having this conversation. I would have loved to have been able to come back and say people are adequately covered, but they're not.
All I know is this here, Tom, it's some mad broke white people right now. And trust me, when you have the 2018 midterms, they gonna give these Republicans hell. So you know what? Us black folks, we just gonna move out the way, let them go ahead and fight this thing out.
Well, apparently not all of us black folks.
Well, that's what's going on. But right now, the conservatives in Congress are not happy at all. So now they fighting this thing out. So we'll see what happens. Robin, thanks. Dr. Robin, thanks a lot.
Thank you,
Congresswoman Val Demings, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Dr. Robin drank the Kool-Aid, didn't he?
Hey, what?
Huggy next. 27 past the hour.
All right, folks. Thanks so much. Coming up next, News One Now. Rachel Maddow has found a copy of President Trump's tax returns. We'll talk about that, as well as talk about Comey testifying today about Russia and Trump. 27 after the hour. News One Now. TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All right, y'all. Last night, MSNBC host Rachel Maddow revealed 2 pages of President Donald Trump's 2005 tax form. She got them from Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston, of course, who has his blog right here in D.C. Here's some of what they had to say.
What I have here is a copy of Donald Trump's tax returns. We have his federal tax return for 1 year, for 2005. I believe this is the only set of the president's federal taxes that reporters have ever gotten a hold of. He paid $38 million in taxes. He took a big write-down of $103 million, more on that later. If you add up the lines for income, he made more than $150 million in that year.
I came in the mail over the transom, and there is absolutely nothing improper about journalists, if you haven't solicited something, getting it over the transom. And by the way, let me point out, it's entirely possible that Donald sent this to me.
Now, that actually makes sense. The White House sent a statement to NBC that reads in part, before being elected, Mr. Trump was one of the most successful businessmen in the world with a responsibility to his company, his family, and his employees to pay no more tax than legally required. That being said, Mr. Trump paid $38 million even after taking into account large-scale depreciation for construction on an income of more than $150 million, as well as paying tens of millions of dollars in other taxes, such as sales and excise tax and employment taxes, and this illegally published return proves just that. Despite the substantial income figure in tax pay, it is totally illegal to steal and publish tax returns. Now, we're used to the Trump people. That's a lie. The fact of the matter is, if you steal it, I mean, that's the case. But if somebody sends it to a reporter, you can actually publish it. That's not stealing. But why are we shocked the Trump White House is lying to us? Let's go to our panel here. Folks, I think very simple. There's no doubt in my mind, all of a sudden, first of all, David K. Johnson has been reporting on Trump for 30 years. Mm-hmm. He said last night, Trump has consistently leaked stuff himself. He used to fake somebody else when he would call New York gossip columnists to get himself in the newspaper. There's no doubt in my mind the White House released this. They dropped it because they were so ready. they were just waiting for Rachel to drop that tweet, and all of a sudden they released it. Which proves they can actually release taxes.
Sure. And what do we have? We have him in Nashville, my hometown today, ostensibly talking about health care.
And Michigan.
But he's not meeting with any health care professionals. He's going to lay a wreath at Andrew Jackson's grave. But let's keep our
eyes on slave owner.
200, exactly. Slave owner, Indian killer, 250 years old today. There's a woman who's a third of that age today, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's where the ball needs to be. Gorsuch's confirmation starts next week. This is all about distractions. You got Bannon and them trying to pull him away from Paul Ryan and this ridiculous health care thing. This guy knows what he's doing. He's an agent of chaos.
And Rena, today Comey goes to Capitol Hill and is likely, according to a Democratic senator, is going to publicly state there is an investigation between Russia and the Trump camp.
Right. So the master of distraction, President Trump, is very strategic in his moves. And one dead giveaway is the words client copy on those returns that came out last night. Mm. Listen, I don't care what side of the aisle you find yourself on. watch that show if you can get your hands on it, Maddow, last night. It was riveting. That journalism, that's journalism.
Yes.
What she found and how she objectively reported on this. All Americans should be concerned about what their president's tax burden was and maybe what it should be in the future as well. But regardless, I think the reality is that this is sick, what the Trump White House does, spinning it on us all the time, that it is not necessary to let his tax returns be made public. We need to know what his foreign entanglements are. As someone who was part of the Never Trump movement, but now somewhat lukewarm supportive of the president because he is the American president, I do wish for his success. I still worry daily about what the tie his administration has, what he has, what Russia has on him. What's that tie? What's the link? We deserve to know. And let me tell you what would give it away in tax returns. Who he gives.
He basically gave no money to anybody.
Oh, no, no, no. But one dead giveaway is essentially who he's paying interest to.
Yeah, who
oh, yeah,
who
right. Who does he owe?
That is what would tell us.
Spencer, we ain't falling for the okey-doke.
That's right.
Trump consistently wants to change the story. He wants to change the narrative. Now, player, the story is still on the health care bill,
right,
and it's still on Russia.
That's right, right. Those are the big issues right now. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that he cherry-picked something where he paid $38 million just to say, hey, I paid all these taxes, $38 million
right.
of money?
Because of
right.
what he didn't release 2004
right.
or 3 or 2. And let me remind people, Hillary Clinton released all of her taxes dating back to 1977. Mm-hmm. This man does not want to do that. And in fact, there was some other reporting, I think by the New York Times and others, that showed that in other tax returns, that he was taking a housing deduction, so greatly limiting his income to qualify for a middle-class housing deduction in New York as well. Taxes would reveal that. Nah. He does not want to reveal the taxes. And to your point, Rena, who he owes money to. That's the real issue because he's been lying to us. Donald Trump has consistently lied by saying he has no dealings in Russia, taking no money in Russia, yet his own son in 2008 blabbed publicly, oh, yeah, we've got millions flowing in from Russia.
And don't forget that, you know, you got Jared Kushner's family getting ready to make a sweetheart deal with the Chinese.
About to make $400
million. $400
million. From China.
These grifters are straight. You nailed
getting
it.
Getting rich off this presidency.
That's exactly
happening.
Right. The first,
we
oh,
see
that's
it,
right.
It's in broad daylight.
That's right.
I think Eric Trump said, oh, our brand hasn't been hotter ever.
That's right.
Yeah, because your damn daddy is president.
That's right.
And as right, as appropriate word, grifters.
Yeah, they're grifting. And I mean, if you think about it, and you're right, the first 20 minutes of Maddow, forget the tax release, the lead up to it.
That's right.
The Bank of Cyprus. What is this new, what's Wilbur Ross's role in this as a trustee of that bank and then working with the banks before that? He can't release. Now, these first two pages, that's great, but go through the rest of the pages that lead up to those first two.
How about this here? Okay, he's going to file taxes this year.
Yes, sir.
And guess what? You can't use the audit lie. Because the IRS doesn't audit presidents.
How about that? How about that?
So now, ooh, I can't wait for that one.
And meanwhile, you
I can't wait for that lie.
You're talking about $54 billion increase. And you're gutting a State Department at the time that North Korea, which Obama told you is the thing you need to be worried about first, is testing intercontinental missiles and arming it with new. What is this guy doing?
Yep. And things are, you know, off the rails in terms of South Korea, in terms of leadership
here. Exactly,
and
right.
So there is this opening.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly what Russia wants.
I just can't wait for the new lie as to why he can't release this year's tax returns. Now, here's the deal. It's probably going to be big, so here's the deal. So he's probably going to get an extension, so he's going to file in October. We'll wait. But I want to see how creative that new lie is going to be. All right, y'all. Next on News 1 Now, driverless cars are expected to hit the road big time in the next few years. Ain't no way in hell I'm going to be in one. But blacks and other minorities who drive for a living could be hurt badly. We'll break down a new report about the economic impact on automated driving. Also, gospel star J.J. Harrison stops by to talk to us about his upcoming tour. 21 before top of the hour, News 1 Now.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, y'all, driverless vehicles. You've seen all of these different images, video and television, and about automated motor vehicles. Could be on the road in significant numbers in the next 3 to 5 years. I ain't getting in one, okay? That's okay. I'm good. I got this. Now, there are big benefits, but also some drawbacks. According to a new report by the Center for Global Policy Solutions, driverless vehicles could put as many as 4 million people who drive for a living out of work, disproportionately impacting Black and other minority workers in the driving industry. Here's one trucker's take on driverless vehicles.
There may be a computer that can drive a truck from A to B on a straight line. But there will never be a computer that will be able to navigate a truck in the heart of Manhattan.
Joining us is Dr. Mine Rocky Moore, President and CEO of the Center for Global Policy Solutions. Here's the thing that people, I don't think, understand. When we look at the job losses in America, automation is driving that. And that's been hurting middle-class workers or jobs where individuals historically have not had college degrees, mm-hmm. but have been able to make a very good living, take care of their family. And that's why we're seeing these losses. You can now go to automation in this area. Look, you're putting, people, again, who can provide for families out of work, and then where are they going to go?
I think that's right. I think for too long we've been talking about job loss in terms of globalization, and people have not been paying attention to how technology has been creeping in and actually taking jobs. I think the way that we can viscerally understand it is when we go into a grocery store and see these self-checkout lines and recognize that, there are no longer as many cashiers as they used to be.
Right. But it's banking.
You're seeing it across these industries. And then people say, it's not going to affect me because, it's for people that don't, jobs are going to be taken for those who don't have college degrees, et cetera. Well, it's also white collar jobs that are actually being taken as well. So our report actually shows that more than 4 million jobs will be lost actually due to, or are likely to be lost due to driverless cars. The estimates are that if you look across industries, that approximately 43% of American jobs could be at risk within the next 20 years. And so this is something that African Americans, Latinos, white Americans need to pay attention to because it could be on us within the next 5 years.
And look, I'm real clear. I am not getting in a driverless car. I'm not trusting the algorithm when something happens. And hell, sometimes my iPhone blink out. I don't know about y'all, but that's just me. Spencer, you go ahead.
This is a critical report. Policymakers need to go to the website and look at this report because we got to focus on the future, right? Future is changing. And as Dr. Rocky Moore said, it's not just the driver. It's doctors, it's accountants, it is law professors, right? All these jobs are at risk in part because of automation, but it's also stuff like analytics and big data and artificial intelligence and machine learning. This is something we got to get on. There's a threat here, Roland, but there are also opportunities. So as opposed to just saying, hey, we're 13% of the population, let's get 13% of the plumber's jobs, we got to think about what are the jobs in the next economy and how do we seize those jobs and really get on top of those jobs.
There is a new economy. That's really great. That's a great point. And people need to learn how to stay competitive. The problem is with a lot of our people of color, we just don't have that opportunity to get educated, right? I mean, in my adolescence, I remember the United Negro College Fund, that commercial, yes. Mind is a terrible thing to waste. And now artificial intelligence is here.
Right. But let me push back a little bit on this in terms of because things are new, we can get in. It's not like people have had a 50-year head start on us with regard to some of these things that are changing. Obviously, we're disadvantaged in some sense, but we can get in because things are changing. Innovation, opens up some opportunities for us.
But here's a question, Maya, in looking at this year. Before you mentioned 4 million. Where, in terms of what regions, will this be mostly impacted?
So we have to understand that the most drivers are out of states like Texas, California, New York, and Florida. However, states like Indiana, Idaho, Mississippi, North Dakota, South Dakota, that these Midwestern and Southern states are going to be disproportionately hit. Here's the picture. Out of all the driving jobs in the country, a predominant number of those drivers are actually white men. African Americans and Latinos, though, are going to be disproportionately affected because we're overrepresented compared to our overall representation in the workforce. Mm-hmm. We're overrepresented overrepresented in these driving jobs. And so, and we get a driving premium from these jobs, meaning that we tend to make more from driving jobs than from non-driving jobs. And so, you know, the challenge is twofold. One, blacks and Latinos are going to be disproportionately affected because we have a heavy reliance on these jobs. But two, the very states that drove in this Donald Trump crowd and these Republicans are going to be hardest hit. They're already hopping mad because what they because of job displacement from what they think is as a result of, you know, globalization and trade.
Well, first of all, we saw when he was made a big deal out of the jobs when he first came in, was the company in Indiana.
Yeah.
Guess what? That company made it clear in a year or two, they're going to replace those jobs with automation.
That's right.
There's going to be a lot of pain in these middle states and in southern states, all represented by Republicans. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is, and then get this, the Republicans are busy trying to tear down the social insurance and safety net structure in this country, even as workers are going to increasingly need it because of automation.
Well, Dr. Rocky Moore, what's the transition? I mean, what kind of jobs should people be looking to, and what is the role of government? Again, the Republicans, clearly the corporate state, corporations are international, they don't care, and this goes back even with health care. Either you believe it's a right or you don't. They clearly don't.
About 30 seconds.
What are you talking about?
I actually happen to believe in entrepreneurship. I think that we need to be training our kids to be really thinking outside of the box, to learn the fundamentals and the ABCs of financial literacy and entrepreneurship so that they can actually be job creators for themselves.
Create jobs doing what, though?
Yeah.
Selling services?
But you've got to be thinking about creatively about what are the opportunities in the future.
Yes.
And so in terms of that, you know, you can prepare for jobs, but you're not going to be guaranteed that they're going to be there.
Right.
Let's train our children broadly so that they have the creative and critical thinking skills to be able to think outside of the box, create their own jobs, and then drive those
jobs. Not just STEM, humanities, broad education.
Broad education, not just STEM.
That's cool.
So where can folks actually see the report?
Come to our website, globalpolicysolutions.org.
Cool. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, folks. Up next, Undefeated talks about the importance of Wilma Rudolph, and we'll talk with gospel artist J.J. Hairston. Talk about his two Stellar Award nominations and his hit single, You Deserve It. 12 before top of the hour, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, in recognition of Women's History Month, we celebrate Olympic gold medalist Wilma Rudolph, who was known as the fastest woman in the world after winning three gold medals in a single Olympics in 1960. Here is a clip of her story provided by TheUndefeated.com.
Wilma Rudolph is one of the greatest track athletes of all time. She won three gold medals at the 1960 Olympics in Rome. She became the first American woman to accomplish that feat. But her story starts long before that. Wilma was stricken with polio as a young child, and she was told that she would never walk again. Ultimately, Wilma recovered and became an icon in the world of track and field. The story that we're telling in the museum is one that's based upon what she did after the Olympics. Because too often, African-American women's activism isn't acknowledged. This is a program from Wilma Rudolph Day in Clarksville, Tennessee. It was a parade and banquet. Originally, the city of Clarksville wanted this celebration to be segregated. They wanted to keep African Americans on one side and whites on the other. But Wilma refused to attend. The city relented and integrated the parade and the banquet. And this is a very important moment because it demonstrates that Wilma Rudolph was someone who understood her power, who understood that she could have influence in society, who understood that she had a platform. And it's unfortunate that her courageous act is often overlooked, and we tend to only look at her for what she accomplished on the track. But what she did off the track, not only at that parade and banquet, but Wilma was someone who participated in sit-ins and other demonstrations throughout Tennessee. And that's the story that we're able to capture at the museum. The story that we're able to keep alive is that sports matter far beyond the playing field. And Wilma's courageous act is one that has to be acknowledged, because she very easily could have just allowed herself to be celebrated. And that's an act of courage that needs to be acknowledged.
All right. Again, thanks to the folks at theundefeated.com for allowing us to run that. When we come back, chart-topping gospel artist J.J. Hairston sits down for a chat right here on News 1 9 TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Birthday shout out time. Milwaukee Bucks Jabari Parker turns 22. Music producer and singer Will I Am turns 42. Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin turns 45. Also yesterday, Quincy Jones was his birthday, so certainly a shout out to him. All right, folks, let's talk gospel music. J.J. Hairston has two Stellar Award nominations. He also has a hit single that's out, tearing up the charts. Take a listen. That, of course, was the single You Deserve It by J.J. Hairston. What's up, Doc?
What's up, sir?
Good to have you here.
Glad to be here. Honored, of course.
All right, so things are certainly going well for you.
Yeah, it's a good season. We got a single that's doing well. Our record just dropped last Friday. It's You Deserve It's a title track, and it's doing very well. It came in on iTunes, like, number one and top 10 overall.
Well, it came in like number one. Ain't no, yeah. like number one. It's number one.
Yeah, it's doing well. People are really supporting it, so we're really grateful.
To talk about, again, gospel music and where it is now, because social media has played a critical part, because when you talk about the number of gospel music radio stations, that's dwindled, but social media allows for you to still be able to expand an audience, even though you don't have the same number of radio stations you used to have.
I have to honestly say the song You Deserve It really gained a lot of ground because of social media. It really swelled in the church and on social media first, and then gospel radio stations picked up on it. And now people in Africa and London and all those places are singing it, all because of social media. So social media has had a definite influence on what gospel music is doing today.
I was talking, when I interviewed Vashawn Mitchell, also several other artists, and we're talking about, again, how when they've gone to the continent of Africa, how it's just unbelievable in terms of how they accepted gospel music.
Sure. I mean, for what we have a concert here, there, you can have a million people out there singing, and it's not strange. I mean, it's like people walk miles just to go out there and sing gospel music. It's awesome.
Well, congratulations, brother. I want to ask you a quick question. Now, Africa, I think that music is still anchored in the church.
Yes.
What's the relationship of gospel music to the literal church? When I was coming along, James Cleveland, Andre Crouch, and them cats, we sang that in the church choir.
Right.
How is your music connected to the literal institution of the black church?
Well, I think that's what we have a lot to be proud of. Our music has been sung and still being sung in churches all across the country. Every Sunday, you could hear a youthful praise song. We're very honored and proud of that. A lot of people they make their music to reach the world, mm-hmm. but we've been assigned to make music for the church, because at the end of the day, that's where people are going to get hope and receive some type of life and some type of peace. So we're making music for those institutions, and God has blessing us through that.
So this is a season of success, yes. For you. And so kind of how do you balance things in terms of your personal walk and then also dealing with success and attention that comes with that?
Well, it's been a great thing. My wife is the one who balances us. Mm-hmm. It's nothing like going out and having people scream your name and then getting home and your wife says, take out the garbage. Right. So she helps to keep me grounded. And I have three wonderful children who I take care of, and they help me keep grounded as well, because I'm still doing homework with them, and my wife is staying on me about that as well. So it's been a blessing to have a successful life in gospel music, but a successful life at home as well.
That's great. So congrats again on this. What an honor. But what are you doing with young people, you think, in gospel, bringing them to it, bringing them back to it, perhaps, in this age of social media? You said obviously the success right. has been due to that. But really, what are you seeing when you're out there? What are you hearing?
Well, I'm hearing that young people are finding hope and peace in gospel music, and it's more authentic. It's not feeling like they're being preached at. It's something they're a part of. And they have their own relationship with God, their own walk that's not being preached at them. It's something they're experiencing on their own, and we're happy to be a part of that. As a matter of fact, we're going on tour next month. Myself, Ty Tribbett, Tasha Cobbs, some big, Jacqueline Carr, big gospel artists, and our audience is, of course, Generation X, I guess they call that, which is my age group, but then the youth as well. And it's called the Bloody Wind Tour, and we're excited about it. It's going to be 20 cities. We're going to have a great time.
All right, folks, the Stellar Awards, you got two nominations.
Yes, sir.
March 25th in Vegas.
Yes, sir.
All right, so
Song of the Year, Urban Inspiration Performance. First time we're in those categories, so we're honored that. And we're going to be singing on the show as well.
All right, then. And, of course, folks, don't forget the Stellar Awards will be airing right here on TV1 on April 9th at 9 p.m. Eastern. JJ, we appreciate it, man. Good luck.
Thank you so much,
Roland. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
All right, then, we'll take the trash out.
Okay.
Tomorrow, News 1 Now, the NCAA basketball tournament has started with the majority of the players being African American, yet those same players have a graduation rate of only 74% compared to 93% for white players. We'll talk about that. Plus, we normally have Wildin' Out Wednesday. Well, we're going to have Wildin' Out on Thursday. So y'all definitely want to tune in. Hit me up on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. Also, hit us on Facebook as well. I got to go. See y'all tomorrow. Holla!
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.